When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So we sit where we've been sitting all week, on a green picnic table, on a piece of grass with the sun setting, blue skies still up above. It is now just short of 9 o'clock in the evening on the final day of Wimbledon, and the moon is rising over Matt's head. He can't see that, but I can. And we have just had one of the most extraordinary days of sport in history, I would suggest, Catherine Whittaker, because not only have we just had Novak Djokovic win the first ever singles 12-all tiebreak in the men's singles final to win his 16th Grand Slam title, he's done so from two match points down, and almost simultaneously England have won the World Cup cricket for the first time.
In a super over final, in the final ball of a super over.
Yeah, well, we were furiously Googling what one of those was, as were just about everybody in the country, it seemed. But yes, that kind of is the short version of what has happened today, and we've got a lot of blanks to fill in because it has been exhausting, exhilarating. I don't really know where to start. Take it away.
Well, it feels like all those things that you described, the sun setting and the moon rising and the sort of natural order of the universe, shouldn't be happening. It feels like the natural world should be recognising the the earth-shattering seismic sporting events that took place today. It feels like things shouldn't be normal.
There should be some sort of storm just developing in the distance.
It feels impolite and... it's not right.
It should be hailing and sunny and snowing and thunderstorms.
Something extraordinary should be happening. It all should be, in a film, the weather would be extraordinary to reflect.
Okay.
Instead, it's just a little bit chilly.
Yeah.
We've all wrapped up.
And the fact, by the way, I can see now you've referenced the moon and I've turned around to look at it. It's a full moon, which means none of us will sleep well tonight.
Oh, well.
And we won't know why that is.
Will that have the reverse effect with me then? Because I've not been sleeping well all 2 weeks.
Because we've had an overdose of adrenaline.
Okay. Or, yes.
Because it's the full moon, but it's all going to be dreadful.
We have. So this men's singles final, which has been won 7-6, 1-6, 7-6. What was the fourth set score?
6-4.
6-4. And then 13-12 to Djokovic. It's a little bit like the Nadal match of a couple of nights ago. It's one of those that I think will be remembered for the end and the dramatic turning points, twists, and astonishing quality of play and just great drama. More than it will for its quality of stroke play, certainly early on, because I thought it was a really slightly weird atmosphere for the first 3.5 sets. It didn't feel like the crowd were that into it. I think probably I haven't looked at all the statistics, but maybe that's because there weren't as many winners as you might normally get. We obviously had a tiebreak first set, which Federer should have won that set, shouldn't he? Is that fair?
He was by far
the first three.
I think he probably should have won the first four sets. If I know that's not possible to win four sets in a row, but he was the better player in all of those four sets. It was one of those matches which started out actually feeling quite familiar to me in terms of Federer having to play at such a high level, which he was doing. He was playing really well, Federer, to kind of live with Djokovic, because Djokovic maybe not playing his absolute best, but was playing his best in the right moments and forcing Federer to play well. And yet, so it started as something familiar, and yet it turned into something completely historic and unique that we've never seen before. You know, a final set tiebreak in the Wimbledon final at 12-all, and with someone saving match points, which hadn't been done in the Wimbledon final for about 70 years, I think. So in that sense, it was extraordinary the way the match sort of changed from being something that we could recognise and understand to something that is very difficult to process just a few hours after it's all happened.
Yeah,
we're doing our best. But it feels like I rarely feel sort of anxious before a podcast, because it's just sort of letting the thoughts in your head tumble out into a microphone. But I don't have thoughts in my head really about it all, other than that the sun shouldn't be setting and the moon shouldn't be rising.
The first set, though, I can't exactly remember what happened in the tiebreak, but I remember Federer being up.
He choked in the tiebreak.
He was down, and then he was up at, yeah, I think, 4-3.
5-3. He was 5-3 up, and Djokovic won 4 points in a row. Yeah. And it did feel like a bit of a choke. I mean, I'm always sort of wary of just labelling something a choke, because your opponent is always part of that.
It was on his racket, though. And look, that is a lot of what makes Djokovic so brilliant. We've seen it almost every single match he's played this tournament. He makes his opponents choke because of the pressure. It's the relentless
smothers
pressure.
Them,
he extracts chokes from people. It might not be the most glamorous way of winning, but boy, is it effective. And yeah, I'll take 16 Grand Slam titles in with whatever level of glamour they come with. But yeah, I think it was a choke. I think the third set tiebreak also was a bit of a choke from Federer.
And the other thing about Djokovic is he's so good at getting the style of play and match that he wants. We were all on our WhatsApp group saying, why is Federer getting involved in such long rallies with Djokovic? He needs to shorten these rallies. But I think Federer maybe could have done more. I think after the first three sets, he'd only served and volleyed about five times in the match. But a lot of the fact that there were long rallies was down to Djokovic with his depth. He neutralises Federer's ability to play with such freedom, because it's always on his feet and he's scrambling and hitting with depth and length and pace, and he's so good at neutralising Federer's weapons.
But that's once he's into the rally. I could see why he wasn't able to deploy the variety and approach to that. I didn't understand why he wasn't serve and volleying more.
I think he should have done it more.
Because that's how you wrestle control.
But also, I think he sees serve and volley now as almost a bit of a surprise tactic more than the platform on which to win the match, because Djokovic is so good at returning. He wasn't actually at his best returning today, but I think he would have locked in and started picking Federer off at the net if he'd done it loads.
Yeah.
I think he must have been fearful of the Djokovic passing shots, but he talked a big game about not going into the match fearful because you've lost. And when I saw how he was playing, I thought, this is game over. I tried to retract my prediction early on. When I saw that he was prepared to get drawn into those longer rallies and wasn't just... I found it very persuasive before the Federer Nadal match, when the way you described your projection of Federer's mentality of just, I'm not going to win rallies, so I'm just not going to get into them. I assumed he would have the same...
Which he didn't do either.
Cut and dry.
I mean, he played long rallies against Nadal, but...
He did, and maybe that's what made him think, I can do that against
Djokovic. And speed of court
Djokovic
is probably part of it as well. The feel out there. I'd gone Federer 4, and I was feeling pretty good about that prediction throughout most of the match, because I couldn't see him. Obviously he lost the first set, but even though he could have won those first four sets, I thought sort of law of averages, he probably will lose one. Djokovic has not played his best tennis throughout Wimbledon until, frankly, he was t- two match points down, and then you suddenly saw him bounce off the ropes. And when he broke back in that fifth set, you saw the real Djokovic come out of his shell. But it wasn't, you know, we haven't seen it much this Wimbledon, and yet he's won it.
No, we hadn't seen it much in the final up until that point. It was bizarre. Neither of them were vocal at all. The crowd were flat. I was looking at the scoreboard and thinking, why am I not? Where's the disconnect here? I was trying to think of a parallel for it, and the only one I could think of, excuse me for a moment going off on a total tangent, was I went to Iceland for my 30th birthday in hopes of seeing the Northern Lights. And when you go to Iceland to see the Northern Lights, you it's basically a sort of coach tour. You pile onto a coach, they drop you off at a motorway service station in the middle of nowhere where there's no streetlights or anything, and they make you sit there in minus 25 degrees until hopefully the Northern Lights emerge.
Can't wait to go.
And it's 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm absolutely freezing my ass off, the door on the bus has come off, so there is absolutely no respite.
Oh my God.
It turns out the motorway service station doesn't serve alcohol, it only serves hot chocolate. It's
looking
all,
forward to how she circles this back round.
It's not how I envisaged ushering in my my fourth decade. Then this sort of really pale green haze, like really pale green haze emerges in the sky, and everyone goes, oh, is that a bit, am I imagining that? Is there a bit of green haze? And the deal is with these coach trips is if you don't see the Northern Lights, you get a refund. And the pale green haze was as good as it got. And we all piled back on the bus, and I went up to the really irritating tour guide who'd been far too pumped for the whole experience, telling us that, oh, it's going to be fine, that the door's broken. It's not fine. It's freezing. I said, do I get a refund for this? She says, no, you saw the Northern Lights. And I was like, I really don't feel at all like I saw the Northern Lights. She's like, you did. That's that pale green haze that you saw. That was the Northern Lights. And now when people ask me, have you seen the Northern Lights? I don't know what to say, because apparently I've been told that I have. That's how I felt after the first three sets. I'm looking at the scoreboard. I feel like the scoreboard is telling me I've seen a really brilliant match. I know in my heart I haven't seen a really brilliant match.
I don't know how to follow that.
No, that was too good for us, Catherine. It's too good for us. Yes, well, I know what you mean. And the...
Do you?
We've all done that, haven't we? The second set was plain...
I told you I was anxious about the podcast.
The second set was plain weird, wasn't it?
Oh, so weird.
Novak Djokovic has never lost a set that one-sided against Roger Federer, ever. And they've played 59 sets against each other to that point.
He just went walkabout. He broke himself in the first game, which was strange, because normally he's so good at recognising when is the time to sort of hit the accelerator. And that would have been the time, having just won the first set, which he didn't really deserve to win. And yet... he played a terrible set. He couldn't find the court.
Like Federer against Nadal the other night, wasn't it?
It was a more shocking version of that, I think, because for Federer, it almost made sense to have a bit of time off, because we know that he's older and it's difficult for him to sustain his level. But for Djokovic, it was like, what are you doing? Where have you gone?
I thought at that stage, this is best case scenario for Federer in a way, because, you know, he's just won a set. He hasn't even been the one who's had to do the tactical tank, and he's level at one set all. This is the thing. Everything was pointing in Federer's way. And I think that is, and we'll get on to it, the press conference, etc. I think that is why he is so devastated tonight. I think this is so crushing to him, because it was all there. He had a better chance in this final than he had in either of the other two.
Oh, it was entirely on his racket. And I know that sports people have to talk a really good game about not having regrets and all of that jive, but... I don't see how he can have anything but regrets about today. As brilliant as he was, I mean, I'm full of admiration for a lot of what he did today, but let's be honest, there are regrets to be had for Roger Federer.
He blew it. And look, again, part of the reason he blew it is his opponent, but even so, Federer won 14 more points in the match than his opponent today, and he lost. And that's, I'm so reluctant to take credit away from Djokovic, because he's won the title again, even when he wasn't playing his best. But for Federer to get himself in those sort of positions, and am I right in thinking, first of all, he was 4-2 down in that set, wasn't he, in that fifth set?
Federer was, yes.
And then he turned it around, got back on serve, and then when did he have the match points?
8-7.
8-7.
He broke...
Didn't he serve for the match as well? Well, was that when he served?
That was when he served. Okay. So he broke at 7-all with a stunning forehand pass. He just shipped the return back, anticipated where Djokovic was going to hit it, and passed him. And that was the strange thing, because throughout the match, Federer was actually playing a lot of the big points quite well. If you think about it, that he took his break points when he had them, and he saved the break points when he had them. But it was in the tie breaks where he fell to pieces, and it was on his match points where the first match point he's serving at 8-7, 40-15, misses the first serve, Djokovic sort of jams him with a forehand return, and he goes wide. But then the second match point is the one where he will have regrets, because he gets the first serve.
He nailed the first serve, actually, and he had a forehand, didn't he? And we've just watched it back, and he went in on a wing and a prayer, really.
It was a kamikaze approach to the net. There was no need to come forward then, and Djokovic just picked him off to get back to deuce, and then he eventually broke to make it 8-all, and then Djokovic held to make it 9-8, and I was thinking, this could be done. I don't know how Federer holds serve after what's just gone on in the last 5 minutes, and to his credit, he did. And then he pushed it into another tie break, and again the same thing happened to him in the tie break. His backhand, it was his forehand in the first set tie break, and it was his backhand in the third and fifth set tie breaks which led him down.
I think if it hadn't been for the 12-all tie break brand shiny new this year, I'd have had Federer in that match. But with that tie break looming, I think it was Pat Cash on Five Live that said, law of averages, there is absolutely no way Federer loses three tie breaks in the same match. And Russell Fuller pointed out, you know, the two coin tosses that have gone previous have no bearing on the coin toss to come. And Pat said, yeah, but Federer doesn't lose three tie breaks in the same match. I just had no confidence in him winning a tie break. I thought the fact that he'd lost those two made him less likely to lose another one.
I felt that the tie break, the third one, was the best chance he would have at that point, because he was serving second this time, and I kind of feel that Djokovic is the younger guy. I think he'd have got the better of him eventually.
Is this the backlash for 2009 when Andy Roddick was serving second?
Yeah, it could be.
And in 2009, if there'd been a tie break at 12-all, maybe you would have backed Roddick. And here, if there hadn't been a tie break, you might have backed Federer, as we were saying. But isn't it, I mean, just amazing how the US Open has never had a final set tie break in a final.
Isn't it?
And that's at 6-all. Wimbledon introduces one at 12-all and gets it in the first year.
First final.
Which,
oh my goodness.
It's extraordinary. It's
the first one they've ever had.
I mean, how did we feel about it? Because
we had a super over and a 12-all tiebreak happening simultaneously.
Yes.
For the first time
I have to say, I was kind of... I actually think the drama and the tennis in this one, when it was around 12-all, was better than it was in Roddick against... Federer.
Definitely.
Back then, because I know that I was sort of waiting for that to end by then, you know, and I think part of that is because the Roddick Federer match had been sensational up until, you know, for the first four sets that had been brilliant. This grew into the crescendo that it became. So actually, you know, I could have happily had more tennis, but I really don't. If players are level up at 12-all, I'm quite happy to go to the tiebreak at that point.
I'm fine with it. I'm interested in the sliding door scenario if it wasn't there. I personally, by the way, don't think that talking about Federer choking or squandering opportunities, however you want to frame it, detracts from Djokovic's victory at all, because today was all about tension and stress and nerves. Those were the defining features. Seeing these superhuman people doing superhuman things but appearing so human while doing that. And I really welcome that, because I'm always banging on about relatability, aren't I? For me, that is an absolutely critical element in investing in sports people.
That's as stressed as I've seen those two, I think.
Absolutely. Really, and it's just extraordinary that we've had this finals weekend seeing three of the greatest tennis players, the greatest sports people of all time, just absolutely overcome by stress. Serena Williams, Roger Federer, Novak Djokovic. And the fact that Djokovic was able to overcome that just enough, okay, it was a squeak, but Serena Williams and Roger Federer weren't able to overcome that. So
there are a few moments out there that I was trying to work out, because I wasn't watching it on TV. I was in this incredibly privileged position of being 10 meters away from the court level on the corner behind one of the players, basically. And there was a moment when there was a very close line call, and Federer, it looked as though Federer's shot was out, and it was called out, and he just sort of raised his arm, you know, he thought it was out, but he raised his arm to challenge, and the umpire didn't initially see it. The crowd had gone wild because they thought it was a winner from Federer, and then the umpire's furiously trying to make people realise that it was called out. And then Federer's like, no, I've challenged, right? And so then the Hawkeye replay comes, and Djokovic doesn't realise that Federer has challenged. He thinks he's put in a late challenge. He didn't see the initial arm raise. And I was watching Federer down the near end, and he was getting really annoyed by the fact that he was getting annoyed by Djokovic coming up to complain. Because he was like, look, I did challenge. I did this, you know. It's not, and it wasn't Djokovic's fault. He just didn't see it. So he's thinking, well, what's going on here? You know, we've had all this, and now you're letting him challenge. And it turns out it's in. So suddenly the whole place feels like it's conspiring against Djokovic again, and the whole crowd goes absolutely wild. And when Federer did break, was it 7-all, you said?
Yeah.
That forehand cross-court passing shot. I thought for a minute we might have a crowd invasion, because people were going so manic in the crowd. They were jumping out of the seats, and I thought, I don't think people can stay in the seats for much longer. But
Pat Cash was cramping in the commentary booth,
wasn't he? Yeah.
Medical timeout.
But that's definitely what I noticed. I mean, look, tensions are high. I don't think these two pretend to be best friends.
Frosty handshake. After a match like that, and frankly, we've never seen a match like that, but after a match like that, you expect a warm embrace at the net, regardless of the relationship with the two players. I was aware that they're not best of mates, and Boris Becker, former coach of Djokovic, had said on the BBC pre-match, there's no love lost between these two. You know, yeah. They're not disguising the fact that they're not best of mates. I was still expecting a real embrace, just in recognition of two people having gone through something that nobody else can ever sympathise with or
but I think that's
understand, and there wasn't.
Symptomatic of how flawed Federer is by this one. I mean, his quotes in this press conference afterwards, where he's trying to sort of sum up his. I mean, it's very difficult,
it's
this stuff, isn't it? And he said
devastating
here.
Devastating quotes. One last time. I can't handle it. Keep talking, David. It's all too sad.
Dear. Anyway, just to go with that announcement, Roger Federer said, I don't know what to feel right now. I just feel like it's such an incredible opportunity missed. I can't believe it. And then at the end, he was asked about his feelings today versus 2008, obviously the one against Nadal. He goes, I'm the loser both times. That's the only similarity I see.
Last line of the press conference.
Yeah. And mic drop, off you go.
I mean, side point, I love these losing press conference mic drops.
Yes, we had one from Serena Williams.
I was going to shout at him as he left the room, Roger, after the 08 Wimbledon final, you went and won the US Open. And look, I think...
He might have given you a hug, Matt. That might have been exactly what he needed.
That was my moment. I bottled it. But I do think a match like this is all part of the kind of legend of Roger Federer in a way. I mean, as someone who has won more than anyone else in the men's game, he's also suffered so many stinging, heartbreaking defeats, a lot of them on this court. You know, he's obviously had a lot of triumph here, but he's also taken some really difficult defeats, the one against Nadal, the 2014 final against Djokovic in a fifth set, now this one.
Well, he's had three against Djokovic total now.
And he's had it two other times at the US Open where he's lost from match points up against Djokovic. He seems to be a player who attracts these dramatic matches, and a lot of the time he does come out as the loser, and yet he has made an extraordinary career out of bouncing back from defeats. But this has to be the most painful because of what he said, that the fact that it was on his racket. He missed the opportunities today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
And in the bigger context, there are two ways to frame this. There's the he's 38 next month. How on earth can you envisage a better opportunity for him to win a Grand Slam title than having too much points on your own serve? But the other way is looking back to the Australian Open this year and the US Open last year, and the defeats that he suffered there, respectively, to Tsitsipas and John Millman in that grueling physical fifth set defeat. We had all, I think, adjusted our feelings about Roger Federer to think that if he's going to win matches, he needs to do it in four sets, unless it's against an opponent that themselves is going to win wilt in the fifth set. I think nobody was picking Federer in five in this match today. I think a lot of people thought it was going to five, yeah, but those that thought it was going to five assumed that that would
surprised
be in Djokovic's favour. I know it's so trite, and I don't expect Roger Federer to be able to think this way right now, but I think this is incredibly positive for Roger Federer's prospects over the next year or so, because he can win. He can win grueling physical battles in five sets, and before today We would have doubted that.
And he's closer to beating Djokovic over five sets now than he was a few years ago.
Yeah.
When obviously they were both younger. But
well, he was today.
Sure. No,
Djokovic wasn't. Djokovic has just won Wimbledon with not being at his best. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, but maybe this is his new best. You know,
I mean, really? 6 months ago, he won the Australian Open and he played some of the best tennis we've ever seen.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he is unable to sustain that level.
I'd be surprised if we've seen the best of him. I'd be surprised if we don't see him regain his absolute best again.
I agree. I think he will have Grand Slams where he is at his absolute best again. However, I don't think we're ever going to get back to, what are we looking at, 2016 Djokovic, when I always go back to that Monte Carlo match that he lost to Jiří Veselý, which was, I mean, seismic. Him losing a match was absolutely seismic. But I don't think we're going to get back.
But just like with Federer back during his domination, Djokovic doesn't approach tennis like that anymore. He's all about
the
this.
Slams.
He's all about peaking, and he hasn't even played his best, and he still won the title. And he's won five of the last six Grand Slams. I mean, he's figured this out to absolute perfection.
It was the match today that made me. Have I done that right?
Is it three? Yeah. Three of the last four.
No.
He's won.
How many has he won?
Four of the last five.
Four of the last five. I'm not very good at math.
But it was the kind of match today where that question, that's kind of a redundant question, but it tells you so much about the qualities of a player. Who do you want playing for your life? He is the most clutch player that I've seen.
More than Rafa.
I think I would put Rafa at the, you know, if you could create the conditions for that, you'd want Rafa at Roland Garros. But if it was any random tennis match on any random court, Djokovic, I think, is your man now.
The way he hits out when his nerve, when he's on the brink of defeat, is incredible.
And he has that degree of safety built into his game that allows him to hit out, as you said, and not risk missing. And yet he can also do that thing of just refusing to miss and hitting with a maddening length and a maddening depth, and just saying, you're going to have to try and get the ball past me, and you're not going to do that because I'm a better mover than you, and I'm not going to miss a ball. And it creates this question in your mind: how do you beat this guy when he's in that mode? And he wasn't in that mode for a lot of the match today, but he was when he absolutely needed to be.
Yeah, quite extraordinary. Couple of other things on him. One is, I still struggle with looking out into the crowd and seeing in that final set him hitting winners, good shots, and row upon row of spectators just sitting on their hands, not even giving him a round of applause. And I just thought, I think that's really sad in a way. I mean, you know, you can't tell people who to like and who not to like, but come on. It's not very sporting, is it?
I really don't know where to come down on this, because there really is a difference between like and respect. And you've got no right to be liked.
I don't say you have, but
Those scenarios bring out, I mean, the strength of emotion. I was cheering for Ben Stokes today like he was a family member. I mean, and I just couldn't ever have thought about doing that. So would you expect Roger Federer's players box to applaud the winners of Novak Djokovic, for example?
Novak Djokovic was applauding shots of his opponent today.
That's different. Would you expect Roger Federer's players box to applaud Djokovic's winners? Because that is the strength of opinion that extreme sporting situations with partisan crowds, it brings that out. Yeah. You feel like they're a member of your family. It does. Provided the crowd are respectful, and then I do draw the line at applauding mistakes.
It wasn't US Open.
It wasn't US Open.
And it wasn't actually 2014 Wimbledon either.
Personally, I think it was respectful. I think it was incredibly tough on Novak Djokovic. Mm. If it was me, I'd have freaking hated it. and I understand why he hated it, but so long as it's respectful, I am okay with it, because it's the strength of feeling that sport brings out in people.
It's got to be one of the greatest qualities that any sports person's ever had, to be able to win with that against them, with that in that atmosphere, to just, it's kind of, I suppose it's a little bit like a football team who goes away from home and is a Manchester United, and they're always the one that everybody wants to beat, and when they were at the best, you know, and they still go away and they still win. It doesn't matter how vociferous the home support is. The only thing is, they travel with their own support, you know. And now, obviously, Djokovic has a massive following of his own. It's just a more niche following, but there weren't many of them in there today, and it's, you know, I just think I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he wins when that's all going on. I could not do that. I mean, I know I can't because I'm a rubbish tennis player, but you know, I don't know how he handles it. I don't really know how he does.
But I do understand the provocation and the desire to prove people wrong.
Oh, yeah. No, I understand that too.
And that's what comes out in him, and amazed that's incredible.
I am amazed by that ability. So on a more general sense, we now are closer in the gap between these three players, four slams between them, 20, 18 and 16, than we've ever been before. Which is, I mean, that there was a moment, I think you put out a tweet, Matt, where you pointed out we're either at 21-15 or 20-16. I mean, we've got a tie break to determine this, the difference between two slams, but for history.
But in a way, that does feel right, that it's something so narrow that's going to decide where they all end up, because they've all been so close and at each other's heels the whole time. But look, if Federer had won today, he'd have been six slams ahead of Djokovic. It would have taken Djokovic seven slams to overtake him, bearing in mind Federer could also win more. It felt like, to me, that Djokovic winning seven more slams is a heck of a lot. And I'm not sure he's able to do that, but now he's only four behind.
Yeah,
it changes the conversation completely. And just on Djokovic, in a way, this whole thing about him, you know, not quite getting the support of the others, he needs to lose a few before he's going to get the support. I think crowds do warm to players that lose.
Well, it becomes your relatability line, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Really. I warmed to Federer when he started losing.
And it's always been this thing of, oh, he will get the support when Federer and Nadal sort of leave the sport, if they leave the sport before him. And yeah, I could see that happening as well. But you know, if he did start losing a few of these really tight, close battles, the way that we've spoken about Federer having lost so many of them in his career, I think crowds do warm to that. Look, I'm not saying Djokovic should be doing that at all. He wants to win, he wants the records. But I think crowds still see him as a kind of dominant force, and that is difficult to relate to and warm to a little bit.
On the subject of the chase and the race for the Grand Slam total, I was thinking about it today, and I was making my notes for post-final and thinking, you know, 2016, taking Nadal out of the equation for a moment, 20 to 16, 6 years between them, Djokovic playing this extraordinary tennis still. I just thought, oh, well, it's just an absolute given that he'll track that down. I mean, how could he not? But then he has been defined by chasing Federer and Nadal. Imagine that they're gone. What is he? Who is he? Where does he find his motivation? I can also envisage a world where he goes, yippee, I can win Grand Slam titles even more easily. But I can envisage a world where he's a little bit bereft.
Well, yeah.
Without them.
We've heard what John McEnroe has said about Bjorn Borg in that respect in the past. I mean, I still think Federer and Nadal have probably got a bit left in them, you know, another year or two maybe. But I think just as salient a point, and maybe even more important, is that look what it's doing to Serena Williams, trying to chase down a record. You know, at the moment, Novak Djokovic has kind of got these free hits where he's just He's younger than them, he's in form, he's racking them up, he's doing it at an incredible rate, and he's still not that close so that they're in touching distance where the, it's going to be when it's the next one will draw you level. Imagine that, and that's obviously, we're a couple away from that. But I could imagine a situation next year at some point, if he were to get to 17.
When the Roland Garros final against Nadal.
Well,
next one will draw you level with Nadal.
Suddenly you start getting matches like that. Because and we had one for Nadal, didn't we, against Federer, where if he wins that and then suddenly he's got a chance to get into 19. I'm sure it would change the mentality going into a tournament. I mean, and we've seen, I think we've seen a pretty stressed looking Djokovic over the last 2 weeks, and again that's why this victory is so impressive, that he still did it. I mean yes we're still in this position whereby yet again the bloke who didn't have to beat them both ends up winning it. That's obviously a factor to consider, but I just, his stickability is amazing. I just wonder whether we may end up getting a Serena-type situation when he gets properly within touching distance.
But he's going to have so many looks, I think, because he is so good on all the surfaces. I think, you know, the next two slams are on hard court. He is the best hard court player in the world. And you have to say, he's the best grass court player in the world. He's beaten Federer now in three Wimbledon finals. And Wimbledon is actually the tournament where is the Grand Slam where he's got the most match wins. He's got as many Wimbledon titles now as Bjorn Borg, which no one really puts Djokovic in that category of grass court Wimbledon specialist, but he's just, the bare facts are that he's so good everywhere. And if Nadal is going to have a drop off at the French, okay, maybe Thiem would be most likely to step in, but you would put Djokovic right there with him. Whereas with Serena, it feels a little bit like the Australian Open now, she kind of goes in so cold from not really playing at the end of the season. That is a difficult one for her now. The US Open, there's so much pressure, so much outside influence going on there. The clay is not going to be her favourite surface at this stage of her career and ever, really. So there's, Wimbledon feels like Serena's best shot, whereas for Djokovic, it does feel like he's got just as good a shot at certainly three of the four.
Tell you what, I can't wait for the US Open.
Crikey, yeah.
US Open's going to be amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and somebody pointed out on Twitter yesterday, I think I screenshotted this and sent it to the group, that the only people that have muscled into the big three over the last, can't quite remember what period, they've done it at the US Open.
Yes.
Cilic, Del Potro, Murray, Wawrinka have all got a US Open.
Yeah.
And Federer has had a rough time there the last couple of years. I can't remember what he did 2 years ago, but I mean,
he lost to Del Potro in the quarterfinal.
And the Milman one was really jarring, wasn't it? But then, as you pointed out, I mean, he'd lost to Anderson, then he lost to Milman, then he loses to Tsitsipas. He's made some really good strides here. I mean, he's had a good year. He's won tournaments. And he's now said he's not playing Montreal. He's going to play Cincinnati. And it looked, hearing from him, like he really did need a break.
Yeah, he always favours Cincinnati over Canada. He's one of the... I mean, I've been to Cincinnati and I really liked it. Best theme park I've ever been to. But most players favour Canada over Cincinnati because it's sort of in the middle of nowhere. It's not even in Cincinnati. It's in Mason, Ohio. But Federer loves it. He always gets a house there with his family, and his kids were selling lemonade, weren't they, on the front drive last year. He's always... I don't find that's sort of, oh, shockwaves, Federer is not going to play Canada, he's going to...
No.
That's, you know.
No, it's just he obviously needs a break. And he, looking at him on the court today, they do quite a lot of stuff with the players, and the, you know, there's all the formalities. He looked so crushed out there today. And he was, you know, total gent about it, but it was noticeable that there was really no interaction between him and Djokovic, really, when they had their respective trophies walking about and stuff like that. It's awkward. I mean, look, there's no getting away from it. It's awkward when you're out there and one of you is crushed and the other one is obviously chuffed to bits, but doesn't want to just throw it in his face, you know. So they're trying to sort of stay out of each other's way until they can get into their own private spaces. It's difficult. But no, this is going to hurt big time. Right, what else has happened today? We've just had the women's final in the doubles, finally. Because this was delayed from last night, wasn't it?
It was cancelled last night at about 9 p.m.
We were mid-podcast, I think, weren't we? And because Cabal and Farah were busy winning the men's doubles.
And we must give them... that's the first ever win, isn't it? Cabal and Farah at Wimbledon. Mm. And I think they're the first Colombian team to ever win it, and they won it 6-7, 7-6, 7-6, 6-7, 6-3. Best part of 5 hours, wasn't it?
And if you have
4 hours 57
any
minutes.
Interest in knowing what doubles means to the players involved in it, just look at a few of the pictures from the latter stages of that final, from the winning moments of that final, because they, I mean, boy, do they tell a story.
And Mahou got hit 3 times. I think did we speak about the eye?
We spoke about the eye. He got another one in the jewels.
Yeah, and another one to sort of, somewhere else. And he just put his body on the line and did not come away with the title. It's crushing.
Really tough. But anyway, and then the women's doubles had to follow this epic of a singles final on the men's side. So eventually Shea Sui and Barbora Strizova and Dabrowski and Zhu got out onto court, and it was won by Shea and Strizova. They won 6-2, 6-4. Congratulations to them. World number one now is Barbora Strizova in the doubles. Isn't that cool?
It's a nice story. Yeah,
very nice
really
story.
Nice.
Mixed doubles, sorry Yelena Ostapenko fans, she lost 6-2, 6-3 with Robert Lindstedt against Dodik and Chan. So
just going back to how we felt about the final set tiebreak, it did feel a bit weird to me today to have a final set tiebreak at that point, because my understanding of why they introduced the rule really is so that the tournament schedule can kind of carry on time in a way. And obviously with a final it does feel a bit weird having that, but then obviously you do have these doubles matches that you have to complete as well. But
Pat Cash did say he thinks they shouldn't have it in the final, they should have it elsewhere in the tournament.
It just felt a bit strange to me having a tie break at that point, because
it feels a little bit arbitrary, doesn't it?
Yeah,
if you're so you accept the need for a tie break, so why not six? Or I mean, I don't feel strongly about it.
No.
To really object. I mean, it was fine. I don't see any strong argument for that, as opposed to any other option.
It was nice that, you know, as you were saying, David, a lot of the drama in that fifth set did happen between 6-all and 12-all.
Yeah.
We did get a lot of good tennis in that period, but maybe we would have had that good tennis earlier on in the set if they hadn't known they're having a tiebreak at 6-all. I think it feels like they've introduced the rule for John Isner. I'm sorry, but it does. You know, he has played about 15% of the matches at Wimbledon that have reached 12-all in the last 20 years, and it just feels like such a big rule change to make
For John Isner.
For John Isner.
Good old John. I think the thing is it wasn't that great a tiebreak.
No.
I think if it had turned into a great tiebreak, we might have felt differently about it.
Really true.
But there we are. You know, congratulations to Novak Djokovic, who's won a 16th Grand Slam title, a fifth Wimbledon. And it was a privilege to watch it. It really was. And I think, folks, that's about it for Wimbledon 2019. Have I missed anything else?
No, do you think Federer's on the beers with the New Zealand cricket team?
Well, actually, Greg Rozetsky walked past in our commentary box and he just said, you know, if I'm Roger Federer tonight, I'm getting wasted.
Greg Rozetsky said that?
He did, yeah.
So, is that the Greg you know?
If Greg's saying
it's
that.
It's a new side of Greg.
So, yeah, he's up for it. I could imagine just thinking, I need a sort of lose myself in a couple of beers, which I've done anyway. I didn't even play.
Sue Barker asked him on the court, you know, oh, now you get to go back to being a dad, and he did hesitate. He said, yeah, go back, and it did look, I could if I wanted to, I could definitely read into his response as sort of, yeah, but I'm going to get on the beers first. Dad tomorrow, beers now.
Well, she said, it's a match we'll never forget. And he said, I'm going to try and forget it.
I mean, those interviews are impossible. Mm. I mean, I know I've spoken to her about them, and she said it's not easy to do them. And
she does, look, I think she does as good a job as anyone, and the players respond to her as well. They definitely have a warmth. It is the only slammer they don't just give the players the mic. Yeah. And for me, I would prefer that, and that's nothing to do with Sue Barker. She really does do it great. Yeah. But just give them the mic.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Talking of warmth. it's a bit nippy out here. We've had a lovely week of weather at Wimbledon this year, but I tell you,
the weather is reflecting the day.
Yeah, at the moment,
the weather's
folks,
doing something dramatic.
We are. I mean, we can still see a bit of blue sky up above and a bit of orange in the distance where the sun is setting.
It's a dusky pink.
It is, but the moon now is a full lit moon in the distance. It looks absolutely beautiful. But we are the only people now overlooking Henman Hill. It is deserted suddenly, as is Court 18, as is basically the whole of Wimbledon. Because we're at the end, folks, and so there's just Matt and Catherine and me sitting around a little picnic table with our virtually finished beers on the final night of Wimbledon 2019, where all the matches have been played, and we are not going to be coming back here for another year. So with that, I'd like to thank Catherine for all of her contributions to the podcast over the course of the fortnight. It's been lovely to have us all together. It's been good, hasn't it?
Is my Iceland story going to get edited out?
No, that's highlight stuff, that. God. I tell you, that's going to be entered into the British tennis, the British Podcast Awards, that one.
That is soon to be not award-winning.
I loved it.
Podcasting.
Yeah, because nothing that we do wins awards. And Matt Roberts, we are so proud of you for everything you've been doing over the last few months on the podcast and all your contributions on social media. You have made this show better, and we love having you on it.
I love being on it. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to come on it. Well,
more to come, folks. More to come. We're going to be back next week with a listener questions special and then another one the week afterwards, because we've already done them. And they're really good. So make sure you get downloading them. They have been guest edited by one of our Kickstarter backers, Alex
Petalas.
I always get Matt to say that because I don't know how to say it, Alex, no offence, who is the owner of Rio with a Y, the lovely dog who is our mascot this year. As I get cramp! Wrong time. It's all right, I'm okay now.
Do you need ice? Dogs?
Matt can get you ice for a fiver.
I genuinely got cramp and almost fell off the bench just then. And so we'll be back with two more shows, and then we'll be into Montreal and Cincinnati.
You're falling at the final hurdle.
If I just stretch my leg, I'm all right now. And then we'll be back with daily episodes at the US Open. You can't get rid of us that easily, folks. We've got loads more to come as well. We're doing more in the autumn. And then in December, we will be kickstarting 2020, which we want to be even better than ever if we can. We've got our newsletter every week and daily at the Slam, so make sure you sign up to that. If you just scroll down on your phone where you're listening to this podcast right now, you'll be able to see the link, and a link if you would like a reminder on December the 1st. It's only a single email, but just in case you want to help back the podcast in 2020, we do it once a year in December, just so that we can build a budget and produce as many of these things as we can and send Matt all over the world being part of the tennis podcast. It's good, isn't it?
Hooray!
Yay! So that's what it's all about. But listen, thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting us. We've had so many nice messages over the course of the last couple of weeks, and people coming up to us and saying really nice things, and it's really appreciated. And we will be back. So stick with us, and we'll speak to you soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.